Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. Finally got things set up here. This is my office here in my apartment, one of my apartments in Medellin. This is where I'll be hanging out for the next few months. Super stoked. This place is just awesome. Boy, ninth floor penthouse. What is it? Maybe 2,500 square feet at the jacuzzi and the master bath. It's got a great view, perfect location. I'm just really, really excited to be back. And we finally got the internet working today. So this is kind of our first test run to see if it is working, see if we'll have any interruptions. Hopefully we won't. So let's get right into the story. This is one of the things that I was talking to many of the presenters at Rebel Capitalist Live about. People like Jeff Snyder and Joseph Wang in particular. And also with Kenny and with Kiyosaki and Hartman. In fact, most of the presenters there. Brent Johnson actually had a long conversation, I think, about this. And many real estate investors or home buyers that I am talking to that maybe watch this channel believe that the United States could be going into a recession. They look at the yield curve. They look at oil prices. They look at negative Q1 GDP. They look at the Atlanta Fed bringing their GDP target down from, what was it, 4%, maybe down to 0%. This is for Q2. So there's all these things. Look at the gold market. Look at the 10-year. I mean, I could go on and on as to why pretty much every single market is pointing towards a recession. So the idea for people who are thinking about buying a house or real estate investors is, well, I'll go ahead and wait until we do go into a recession, because then the Fed will drop rates again, and I'll wait to get a cheap mortgage. You know, mortgage rates are, I haven't checked them lately, but let's just say 5%, 5.2%, and I'm talking about 30-year fixed rate. So we'll just wait until the recession, the Fed will drop rates. We've seen this movie before. And then we'll go in and we'll wait to buy a house then when I can get a mortgage for 3% instead of 5%. But I don't know that this will play out. Why? Because of Milton Friedman's interest rate fallacy. This is one of the things, this is one of the biggest blind spots I think Austrian economists have. I tweeted that out earlier. But I don't know that Milton Friedman's theory is correct 100% of the time. And maybe, I think Jeff would probably argue, Jeff Snyder would argue, that it is if you consider the global dollar supply. But I'd like to try to get a little bit more nuance and just consider the domestic economy in the United States. So if you're not familiar with the interest rate fallacy, we're going to go over that here momentarily. But basically, it's pretty much the opposite of what Austrians believe. The Austrians believe that lower interest rates create additional money supply. Higher interest rates limit money supply. Another way to say that is lower interest rates equals easy money, and higher interest rates equals tighter money. And maybe not tighter money, but tighter money conditions or easy money conditions. I think adding that word on the end, conditions, is very, very important. You guys are going to see why. So the main takeaway here, and then we'll explain it further, is if interest rates go down the next time, let's say Fed raises to 2%, 2.25, breaks something, and then they bring rates down. Although we may have lower interest rates, I don't know that you'll be able to get a mortgage. Most people, I don't think, have thought this through, because they just assume that we'll go back to the way things were pretty much since, let's say, 2014. But I have personal experience with the interest rate fallacy. When I was buying real estate in 2012, when I retired, most of you guys know the story, I bought most of my properties just cash. And so I bought all these rental properties with cash. They were in great neighborhoods. I had them all rented out. And then I took this portfolio of rental properties where I had 100% equity, again, paid cash for them, and all the rehab was cash out of pocket. So I took this portfolio to the local banks and the big commercial banks in Kansas City, And they wouldn't even give me a line of credit on the equity. I was like, just give me like a 30%, 40% LTV. And none of them would do it. Now, go ahead and look at what interest rates were back in 2012. There were 0%. Mortgage rates were very low. So did we have loose monetary conditions? Did we have loose money conditions or tight money? Obviously, we had tight money. So I think we could go into a scenario where we have very low interest rates, but very tight money. When you think about what the economic environment would have to look like in order to prompt the Fed to take rates back down to zero in the first place. And to me, that economic environment looks like one where banks are going to be unwilling to lend, very similar to what we saw after the GFC. Now, you may say, George, well, they'll come in and backstop the banks, or they'll make the paper good. I'm talking about the loans. And Fannie and Freddie will always buy the mortgage. Maybe, but maybe not, because back when the Fed was doing that, providing liquidity or backstopping the system, they were doing that in an environment of disinflation and where inflation was under 2%. Can they pull off the same thing when inflation is 8.6? Now, I'm not saying that the Fed's balance sheet expanding is somehow going to create consumer price inflation. I'm not saying that it's going to create more dollars circulating in the real economy. In fact, if money was tight, on net balance, it might not even move the needle. It might only make up for what the banks are not lending. But my point is, just because the Fed raises their or increases the size of their balance sheet doesn't necessarily mean that we have loose, quote unquote, loose money conditions on net balance, because there's more loans that are being paid off than are being created by the commercial banking system. Because if you're a bank, would you lend in that environment? No, you'd only lend if they're backstopping it. Maybe Fannie and Freddie does, but that's only if there's a buyer for those mortgage-backed securities. And if the Fed isn't backstopping it, because maybe not, again, not because they're creating M2 with their balance sheet with base money. Base money doesn't necessarily mean broad money, but it would be the optics and the politics involved, where if inflation was still at, say, over 8%, could the Fed expand their balance sheet? Could they go back down to zero just from a political standpoint? I don't know. These are all questions that I think we have to answer. Hey, guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. So let's get into this article. Very, very good article, by the way, from Bitcoin Magazine. And I want to give this person all the credit in the world, because this is a really, they took Milton Friedman and Richard Werner and kind of combined them together. So this guy's name is, or gal, I'm not sure which, Ansel Lindner. Ansel, probably a dude, I'm guessing. But let's start off by looking at headline here, Milton Friedman, End the Interest Rate Fallacy. So this is a quote from a paper or a book that Friedman wrote in 1968 called The Role of Monetary Policy. Actually, this I did not, I knew he wrote about this from Snyder, but I didn't know that he had a paper or a book. This is something, boy, this is a book. I really need to get this. But it starts off with a quote here from the paper or the book. As an empirical matter, low interest rates are a sign that monetary policy has been tight. And he is intentionally conflating monetary policy with economic activity. And that's where the author cleverly inserts a theory from Richard Werner. We're going to get into that in just a moment. In the sense that the quantity of money has grown slowly, high interest rates are a sign that monetary policy has been easy, in the sense that the quantity of money has grown rapidly. The broadest facts of experience run in precisely the opposite direction from that which the financial community and academic economists have all generally taken for granted. Paradoxically, the monetary authority could assure low nominal rates of interest, but to do so, it would have to start out in what seems like the opposite direction by engaging in deflationary monetary policy. So just to expand on that thought, Friedman clearly said that interest rates follow monetary conditions, right? And this is the key here. So the Austrians, from what I've read and what I've heard, they believe that that monetary conditions follow interest rates. So, or taking it to a next step, they may believe that interest rates follow money supply, as if there's some sort of limit or constraint on the amount of money being produced. But more on that here in a moment, or I might just save that thought for another video. But just to stay on point, again, most of the academic community and definitely the Austrians believe that monetary conditions follow interest rates, where Friedman says, no. Interest rates actually follow monetary conditions. So again, how does this apply to housing? In the next downturn, we could see an environment. And again, I'm not saying that Friedman is always, that this theory is 100% correct, because I've seen times like 2012 where you could say it was correct. And then there's times like, call it 2018, 2019, where it might not have been correct, where I think money was getting a little bit looser, at least as far as the projects or the entities that were getting financing were projects that were just basically financialized, or financial institutions or big corporations buying back their shares would be a great example. So I guess the pushback from the monetarist would be, well, that may be true, George, but that new money creation isn't going into the economy to produce more goods and services. It's not producing economic growth. Therefore, you're not going to see interest rates in the long end of the curve go up, because those interest rates are more dependent upon future inflation expectations and expectations of future economic growth. And sometimes those can kind of be one and the same, and we'll get into that here in a moment. So again, let's just read this from the start so we're all on the same page. Friedman clearly said that interest rates follow from monetary conditions, not vice versa. Has been tight or has been easy. Interest rates moves do not lead to monetary conditions. Low interest rates do not cause monetary expansion. It is a deflationary environment that causes low interest rates. So again, what does this mean for home buyers? They may drop rates, but because we're in a deflationary, and I don't want to say this from consumer price inflation, but a deflationary economic environment, or a risk, because I don't want to confuse the CPI in here. We are in an environment where the banks are going to see greater risk to lending. We're in an economic condition that is where there's a lot of counterparty risk in the system. We're in a potentially a deleveraging, and we're in an environment where there's a lot of uncertainty. I think economic uncertainty, maybe that's the way I should say it here. And therefore, you might not be able to get that 30-year fixed rate loan, even though you've got a 750 credit score, just like I couldn't get a loan back in 2012. Moving on to another quote from Friedman. These considerations not only explain why monetary policy cannot peg interest rates, they also explain why interest rates are such a misleading indicator of whether monetary policy is tight or easy. For that, it's far better to look at the rate of change of the quantity of money. And I don't know how he was measuring money back then. I don't know if he was using M2. I guess I'll have to get the book or the paper to find out. So here's where the author inserts Richard Werner, and he kind of connects the dots. So he says, 5 decades after Friedman, Werner, who you guys know, I'm sure you know him. I've interviewed him on my channel. I had the honor of having him out as a speaker at the last Rebel Capitalist Live event. He's pretty much the person who coined the term quantitative easing, as the author points out right here. And this is when he was working, I believe, as a consultant for the Bank of Japan back in the 1990s. So what Werner found was that interest rates followed the direction of economic growth. So here you go. And this is probably, I'd like to talk to Snyder about this, because this is probably why he's always talking about the expansion of the global dollar supply and economic growth as though they are, I don't want to say one of in the same, but maybe tied at the hip or connected at the hip in most economic, in most environments, or most throughout most of financial history. So interest rates are the dependent variable that follows levels of growth in the economy. This is exactly the opposite of how most people think of interest rates, as the casual factor of economic expansion. In other words, after collecting and applying statistical processes to 50 years of post-World War II data, Werner found that lower interest rates do not stimulate the economy. Lower interest rates meant there was low growth. Just like Milton Friedman said that low interest rates mean that that money is tight. And Werner is saying that it also means that there is low growth in the economy. And therefore, you could say that if the economy is, if banks see productive opportunities to lend, by definition, this means that the economy is most likely growing. And if they see productive opportunities to lend, the economy is growing, there's going to be capital that is created, or money that is created by the banking system to fund that productive growth. And therefore, you're also going to see an expansion in the money supply. Therefore, lending conditions are going to get looser, or more loose, more easy, if you want to use that term. So this is how we've connected the dots here, right? If lower interest rates mean an environment of tight money, low growth, then what happens when banks start to see that the risk reward makes sense for creating more loans, by definition, this is going to mean that there's most likely going to be future economic growth, because why would those corporations or those companies, those businesses, be borrowing loans productively to make more stuff, to create more goods and services, more widgets? And that creation of more widgets is going to mean more economic growth, which is funded by the money supply growing and funded by easing of monetary conditions. So and that article goes on, guys, so I'd highly recommend reading it. So main takeaway here is that if the Fed goes into another cycle where they are lowering interest rates because they break something, or we go into a recession / depression, who knows what, it's not a given that you'll be able to get a mortgage. Maybe you could, maybe you can't. But I wouldn't sit back and just assume that there's 100% guarantee that if the Fed lowers rates, that you'll be able to get that mortgage, 30-year fixed rate loan for 3% to buy that house. That's pretty much what I want you guys to think about here. All right. Hopefully that live stream was uninterrupted by the internet. And we're going to do a whiteboard video tomorrow, guys. Going to do an interview with my good buddy Rick Rule on Friday on the George Gammon channel. So getting back into the swing of things, and we'll get right back to our normal schedule starting next week. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.